Thank you, Shelley. A few weeks ago, we were talking about this sermon, and I told Shelley, can you play Leaving on a Jet Plane? She's like, okay, tell me why. She did a great job and put this together. Thank you. The topic for my sermon is a little different. It's called, Lord, I Want to Be a Good Christian. Just Don't Make Me Fly. So why that? Well, I fly a lot. In fact, in 2018, so far, I have taken 37 flights. And the year is still just about, we're only about halfway through, so I'll probably get close to double that. There's a cool app that lets you map out all your flights. And some of these are doubles, so some of these locations I've been to multiple times. And that's part of my business life. I have to travel for work. And just curious, how many guys or women in here fly for work today? Yeah, so some of you can relate to this. Some of you maybe used to do it. It's just part of the business world. But 1 week back in April, I had 3 round trips in 1 week, which is somewhat unusual for me. Usually I'll take one trip, one location. But back in April, because of client needs, I had 3 trips, one to Chicago, one to New York, and one to San Francisco. And by the time the San Francisco flight came around, I was just worn out. And it turned out to be a flight where I was leaving in the early evening, getting into San Francisco 5 hours later, which would have been 2 in the morning or 1 in the morning my time. And then I had to go to a meeting the next morning, turn around and fly back home. So I was wiped out even before it started. And it was shortly after that that Pastor Kevin asked me about filling in this week for him. And by the way, for those who don't know me, I'm Bill Soliker. I'm an elder here at Christ the Shepherd and one of the band of preachers. And so PK asked me to fill in. And I said, so what's on the docket? What are we preaching about? And he said, you can just pick a topic. I said, okay, it's kind of nice, I think. And I said, can you help me with that a little bit? And he said, well, Bill, where is God messing with you? Take that as a topic and then explore that and use that as your message. And I thought about that trip to San Francisco, and I thought, God was messing with me there. It was one of those flights that just seemed, I guess I can say this in church, hellacious. I mean, it just brought out the absolute worst in me. And you're used to seeing me on a Sunday morning or maybe a Wednesday evening, and I'm pretty much an affable kind of guy. I like to tell jokes. People like me, I think, and I like all of you. And that's the Bill that you see. What you don't see is the Bill who is on a flight to San Francisco on a Thursday night and just worn out, and it just absolutely brings out the absolute worst in me. For me, it's flying in those situations. But for all of us, we have something that does that, something that sets us off, right? It might be traffic. If you're in Atlanta and you're commuting or even just driving around town, traffic might just set you off. It might be family. Does your family just tend to bring out the worst in you? Or maybe there's just one of those family members that does it for you. Or maybe it's your job, it's at work, or a particular coworker. For others, it's politics. Anytime I deal with politics, I go from being this nice guy to just this manic guy that nobody recognizes. It might be on Facebook. I hear people say, you know, I see things on Facebook and it just sets me off and I just want to rant and say nasty things back to them. All of us have those things. Even as Christians, we deal with that, and we have different things that set us off. And if we think about what the first reading said, Paul back in Romans, so this is going back a couple thousand years ago, he said, I don't understand my own actions. I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. And he goes on to say, I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep doing. So this is nothing new. Paul struggled with it. I think people from from the time of Adam and Eve to today, we all struggle with that. And we want to be that nice Christian person that we are here on Sunday mornings. But life has a way of just messing with us.
So anyway, that's
what we're going to talk about today. As I was thinking about this question, actually several weeks ago I was sitting here in the sanctuary, and I was talking about the challenges of trying to be a good Christian when I have to deal with things like business flights that really get me upset. But I wanted to do this with the lens of the Bible. And so I was kind of struggling with how I did that. And then I was sitting here and I opened the Bible to James and I just started browsing it. And as I was reading James, I said, there's my answer. James is a great book that is filled with advice on how not only to say that we have faith, but more importantly, to act on that faith. And so what we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at my less than Christian behavior on a business trip through the lens of James. Now, as a reminder, who was James? So as far as we know, James was a brother of Christ. He was not one of the 12 apostles. In fact, he probably did not come to faith until sometime after Christ had died and rose. If you look at his writing, the letter of James is much more of a moralist kind of writing than a theological treatise. If you think about Paul's writing, a lot of what Paul writes about has a heavy dose of theology, a lot of Christology, talking about what Christ, who Christ was, what he means for us. James, instead, is much more practical. It's almost like the Proverbs of the New Testament, if you will. And so Luther himself, who was, of course, a great theologian, had a less than stellar view of James, and he wrote, I love this quote, that James was a right straw-y epistle in comparison with the writing of Paul, Peter, and John. Now, what does that word straw-y mean? It's S-T-R-A-W-Y. What he meant was, if you think about these other letters, that they are really foundational to our faith. And they're like stone. They're like we're building on the rocks of these great theological giants. And James, on the other hand, is a little bit made of straw, because it's just about what we should do, but not necessarily what we believe. But if you really look at James, there is some theology in there. It's just not quite as evident as it is in the other letters. So that's what he meant. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a little trip here. So I want to make sure that your seat backs are forward, your tray tables are upright and in the lock position, and your seat belt is securely fastened. Ready for takeoff? Okay. I don't see any lights, any of those little lights going on. So, okay, we must be good. So the one thing I think right off the bat, when I think about taking a trip, and I know that there's going to be anxiety, when I know there's going to be some level of stress, I really need to open up James and just start my trip off with maybe a good reading or two from James. And where I thought I would start is here in the very first chapter. And I'm using, in the slides here, I'm using the Message version, which is definitely a paraphrased version of the Bible. But it really speaks in a modern language, and it's very relatable in these kind of situations. So I decided to use James here. And I said, consider it a sheer gift, Bill. When tests and challenges come at you from all sides, you know that under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open and shows its true colors. So don't try to get out of anything prematurely. Let's do it. Let it do its work so you become mature and well-developed, not deficient in any way. If you don't know what you're doing, and that's often the case, pray to the Father. He loves to help. You'll get his help and won't be condescended to when you ask for it. Ask boldly, believingly, without a second thought. People who worry their prayers are like wind-whipped waves. Don't think you're going to get anything from the Master that way adrift at sea, keeping all your options open. So if I begin a trip with this in mind, I think I'm going to have a different kind of framework and attitude just from the very beginning. So that's where I'd like to start. Now, when I start actually a real business trip, it starts with packing. And I don't know, how many of you really enjoy packing for a trip? Not so much? Yeah, for me, it's where the anxiety begins. One, it's a reminder that I'm going to be away, sometimes just overnight, but sometimes for several days. I've got to think about everything I need for these few days and put it in my suitcase. It happens usually, but there was one trip to Chicago a couple years ago where I totally forgot socks. And it's not easy to buy socks in downtown Chicago, I learned. So the anxiety begins. The cats are trying to get into my suitcase. I'm trying to decide what's the right set of clothes to go together. Do I need a jacket? Is it going to be cold? Is it going to be warm? All of these factors. And so the stress is beginning. And meanwhile, Nancy is looking at my suitcase thinking he's going away again. So the anxiety and the stress is beginning right there at home. So how can I overcome that? Well, if I think about James, and I go to the first chapter, I read this. Anyone who meets a testing challenge head on and manages to stick it out is mightily fortunate. For such persons loyally in love with God, the reward is life and more life. So am I ready to take on this challenge and do it with a different attitude? Do it with a James perspective instead? I think that will make the packing a whole lot different. If I think about this is a challenge that I'm going to face, it's going to be a test of my faith. Can I go through this trip and be the guy that I want to be from the beginning to the end? I don't normally think that way, but I'm challenging myself to do that. And I'm challenging you to do that as well with whatever challenges you face. So once the packing's done, what's next? There's the goodbyes. I didn't put a slide together for that. Getting in the car. And then the most dangerous part of the journey starts. It's driving. Now, I live about, depending on the route, either 35 or 38 miles away from the airport. Some of you, if you're up here in I'm in Peachtree Corners. If you're in Alpharetta, it's even farther. Is there a good way to get to the airport? I see. Yeah. There's MARTA, but I have to go to Doraville or Chamblee to get on MARTA. It takes a long time. I can go through town, and this is a picture of getting into downtown Atlanta, or I can go around 285. But regardless, no matter which way I go, it's stressful. It's dangerous. I have been in so many near misses over the years. Fortunately, I've never been hit or been in an accident on the interstates here. But with the trucks zooming by at 70 plus miles an hour, with the folks who are racing and zigzagging from lane to lane, you're really putting your life in your hands. And it's not a real calming experience as you're getting ready to take a trip. So one of the things I've actually done is to sometimes find somebody to talk to. And oftentimes, because I'm the head elder here, I check in with Pastor Kevin. A lot of times, I'll talk to Pastor Kevin on my way to the airport driving. He's probably like, why does he always call me when he's driving? But for me, it calms me down. It's a nice way to sort of take that time and be relaxed. But for the most part, I feel like it's dangerous, I feel like it's stressful, and it's just building up that anxiety about the whole trip. So what does James have to say about driving? Well, nothing in particular about driving, but I found this next section of James to be really appropriate. Where do you think all these appalling wars and quarrels come from? And you know, if you've been out on the Atlanta highway, sometimes it feels like a war. Do you think they just happen? Think again. They come about because you want your own way and fight for it deep inside yourselves. Does that resonate when you think about traffic? I want that lane. I want to be there first. Get out of my way. You lust for what you don't have and are willing to kill to get it. That certainly seems to be the case with some of the drivers out there. You want what isn't yours and will risk violence to get your hands on it. So I think what James is saying here in a totally different context is this is something that comes from within us. This desire for getting our own way and wanting it so bad that we will do violent things to try to achieve it. And when I think about being behind the wheel, I see people doing crazy things, myself included, just to get a few minutes ahead. And I know if I were to do the math, and I come from a math background, and calculated the amount of time it would take me to go from my house to the airport driving 65 miles an hour at the speed limit versus how much time it would take if I drove 75 or 80, the speed that a lot of drivers drive, I might save 5 minutes. It's not really a lot of time in the big scheme of things. But why do we do that? And why is it, maybe this is more of a guy thing, as cars come up behind you and want to get around you and go faster, you want to hit the gas and catch up with them. Or somebody cuts you off and you want to get in front of them and cut them off. Anybody can relate to that? Yeah, Atlanta traffic or any big city traffic will do that to us. So again, I'm not even to the airport yet. And look what's happening. So And this happens almost any time. The only time it doesn't happen is if it's one of those 6 a.m. flights. And then it's sort of a blessing, but I don't really like driving when I'm half asleep in the morning. So anyway, this is just the reality for those of us who commute out of the Atlanta airport. So what's next? I'm at the airport, made there safely. I have a place where I always park, North Terminal, level 2. I'm in a routine. I go into the airport, know where I'm heading to security. And then the three letters that scare travelers more than anything else. TSA. Yeah. How can the government be so cruel? I know any of us who lived through 9/11 know the importance of transportation security. And I even try to think back, what was it like before 9/11? I can't even remember what getting through the airport was like back in those days. But I know it was a lot easier. And so TSA, there are occasions where sometimes if it's a midweek trip, you can walk right up to the TSA agent. And I have TSA pre-check, pre-approval, so that helps. Sometimes midweek, you can walk right up and get checked in and no problem. But if you travel on those peak days, there's almost always a line. And there's almost always somebody in front of you who is having a struggle. What do I need to do? Or you have an agent who seems to be distracted, or they're changing assignments for the agent. There's always something that just sort of gets at you, right? That is taking what should be a smooth process and making it more challenging. And I know for me, I tend to be just upset with the whole process, and who do I take it out on? Those TSA agents. I tell you, there's been more than one occasion where I have just given them just the limit of what I felt I could get away with in terms of criticism or being upset at them. I know if I push it a little too far, I'm going to get taken out of the line and it's going to ruin my whole day. But are they there to aggravate me? Is that their job, to make it unpleasant for Bill Soliker to fly? No, their job is to keep me safe. And I totally forget that. I get so frustrated, I totally forget. That's what they're there for. They're there to help us all, help us stay safe. Now, whether they do it or not, that's a big question, but that's their role. And these folks are not getting paid highly for this job, I don't think. It seems to be a fairly thankless job. So how can I think about this differently with James in mind? So this is what I found, and I'm going now to the last chapter of James, chapter 5, where he says, "Friends, don't complain about each other. A far greater complaint could be lodged against you, you know. The judge is standing just around the corner." So if I take this passage and I say, well, what is it like for the TSA agent to deal with me? Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm okay because I've gotten through the line quickly, but a lot of times I've got a grimace on my face and I'm upset because I've had to be in line for 30 minutes. What is it like from their perspective? It can't be pleasant because I'm not the only one they're dealing with. It's person after person. And those of us in line, sometimes we're complaining about these folks that are just trying to do their job. Why do we complain about them? They can't help the situation they're in. They're not the ones that created it. They're not the ones that manage it. They're just the ones that are trying to do their job to keep me safe. So can I have a different attitude about them? Can I treat them kindly? Can I treat them as friends, as brothers? They may be fellow Christians. I don't ever think about that in a typical business flight situation. But should I? Who are those people that you encounter on the things that get you upset? Is it a retail clerk? Is it, I don't know who it might be in your world, somebody at work? Can instead you think about not complaining about them? Think about what they see when they see you. What is it like to work with you? What's it like to have you as a family member? Maybe when we think about it that way, it shifts our whole thinking. Okay, we're through screening. Yay, we're getting there. What's next? Boarding. Should be a nice, easy process, right? No. I fly on a lot of different flights. I fly United, or Airlines United. They have a nice system where you've got different zones from 1 all the way to 5 or 6. People queue up nicely. I fly Southwest Airlines a lot. Southwest has a system where you get a number when you check in, and then you line up in that number. It's nice and orderly. And then I fly Delta sometimes, and Delta has what I call the herd. And if, how many of you fly Delta? You know what the herd is, right? Half of Atlanta has Sky Priority. I don't, but that herd of people with Sky Priority, they don't have any way to line up in a systematic order. Instead, they're just this massive folks all trying to get on there. Now, why are they trying to get on in such with such energy? It really comes down to one thing, doesn't it? Bin space. I need to have bin space. If I don't have bin space, they're going to make me check my baggage. Then I have to go wait for the baggage carousel. I don't want to do that. I think that's creating a lot of anxiety for folks. I just want to have a place for my suitcase. So that's the big question about that. The other one, I think, is, and especially if you fly Southwest, who's going to sit next to me? It's open seating. If I have a good number, like I'm A17, that means I'm the 17th person on, I'm going to get a good seat. But that means there's probably a middle seat next to me. Who's going to get that one? Am I going to like them? I'll come back to that one in a minute. But there's a lot of anxiety in what should be just a nice, easy process. And I think we see that in a lot of parts of our lives. Things that should be easy create all sorts of anxiety for just various reasons. And in this case, it's like, I need the bin space. I want to make sure I don't have to check. So if I can get on and I can get a bin, I'm really good. Now, and let's say I'm flying Southwest, which I fly probably more than the other airlines. It's all about who's going to sit next to me. And so I typically like to get a window seat if it's a long flight, aisle seat if it's a short flight, which means there's a middle seat next to me. And I'll just sit there watching folks as they come on. And mentally I'm going, yeah, yeah,
no, no,
yeah, yeah,
no.
Has anyone done that? You're laughing, yeah. And why do I care? Well, it's all about the armrest, right? We're going to have armrest wars here in a minute. When I was a kid, I grew up with three sisters, and we used to take car trips, and everybody dreaded having the middle seat. But I had an answer for it. I would lick my arms, and I'd hold them like that. Go ahead, get close to me. Now, I haven't done that on an airline flight yet, but I've been tempted to. So anyway, there's this anxiety all about that boarding process. How am I going to get my suitcase on? Who's going to sit next to me? Well, what does James say about this? This was the one that really kind of reached out and got me. If a man enters your church wearing an expensive suit and a street person wearing rags, come in right after him, and you say to the man in the suit, "Sit here, sir, this is the best seat in the house," and either ignore the street person or say, "Better sit here in the back row," haven't you segregated God's children and proved that you are judges who can't be trusted? Isn't that what I'm doing? What I'm saying, yeah, you can sit here. I'd rather you not sit there. Because really what I don't want is somebody who's going to encroach on my space, make it difficult for me. I think James tells me to do something differently, doesn't it? It almost tells me I should take the middle seat voluntarily. I'm not there yet. But I've thought about it in preparing for this sermon. Do I be that guy and say, everybody else get on first, I'll wait? That's what I'd like to do, but I'm still struggling with that. So anyway, that whole boarding process, again, it creates that anxiety. We have not even backed away from the terminal yet. So what's next? Flying. Doesn't that look peaceful? We're up in the air now. Takeoff has gone on. I'm not even going to talk about waiting for takeoff and any of that, but now we're flying. It should be nice and relaxing, but instead, what kind of things can happen? Well, first of all, being a business person, I want to take advantage of the time I'm on the flight, and I want to use the internet. And my expectation for internet service on airlines is that it should be at least as good as it is in my office or at home, notwithstanding the fact that we're flying 500 miles an hour across the country. I expect that internet service to be good, uninterrupted. I should be able to get my emails quickly, download things quickly. Does that ever happen? No. I'm fighting with 100 and something other people on the airline for very little bandwidth, and It's a wonder we can get internet at all moving that quickly, but somehow we do. But I get frustrated about that. I get frustrated about crowded seats. Maybe I don't win that little lottery coming in and somebody's sitting next to me who's really crowding me. And if I'm going all the way out to the West Coast, that's a long time to be crowded. If I'm in that window seat, I guess the older I get, the more this becomes an issue. Halfway through the flight, I have to get up to use the restroom. It's good to stretch anyway, but it's never easy to wake up the person in the center seat and then get the other person and get out and then go down to the very tiny restroom. None of that's any fun on a flight anymore. So more and more struggles in what should be a relatively peaceful experience. What I have found lately is just give up on the internet, download a movie from Netflix, and watch it on my iPad, and don't even try to do any work. And I found that is helping. But what does James have to say about this situation? Well, James says, real wisdom, God's wisdom, begins with a holy life and is characterized by getting along with others. It is gentle and reasonable, overflowing with mercy and blessings, not hot one day and cold the next, not two-faced. You can develop a healthy, robust community that lives right with God and enjoy its results only if you do the hard work of getting along with each other, treating each other with dignity and honor. If I think about that and think about the attendant who is serving me and think about the fellow passengers on my flight, with this in mind, I'm going to have a totally different experience, aren't I? So this is a really, I think, a great verse for me just to, when I get on the flight, I should open up James chapter 3 and just read this as a reminder. Anytime you've got those kind of situations, have James kind of handy or think about that. I think it will change your attitude. Okay, so we're flying, getting close to wherever. Let's say San Francisco. Let's say it's that San Francisco trip that I mentioned earlier. Now we're landing. Yay. Should be piece of cake from here on out, right? Not so much. And particularly in that trip, well, I did not include one of the key things on the beginning of that trip. So again, this was an early evening flight out of Atlanta, or maybe late afternoon. And we all got on board the plane. They actually went through all the safety announcements and all that. And then they said, you can see some activity going on between the attendants. They came on and said, we've just discovered that catering has not put any food or drinks on board the plane. So we've got a five-hour trip out to San Francisco with nothing to eat or drink. So they said, so what we've decided to do is we're going to wait for catering. We're going to let catering come in and fill up the bins and all that, and then we'll take off. My thought is that should take about 10 minutes. You know, bring all this stuff on. And then you're done. But no, if you looked out the window, you saw the catering truck come up after about 15 minutes, and then you saw the one guy on the catering truck taking one tray at a time up the steps into the kitchen and loading it, and then back down, and then back up, and back down, and back down. 35 minutes later, we finally are filled with all the food and drink we need. Okay, so we've already lost 30 minutes, right? Well, luckily on the flight out there, we had good winds, whatever, and we land actually right on time. So the attendants come on board, and I also have to admit, I was one of those person pushing the little button saying, why is this taking so long? Why is this taking so long? We finally get there. The flight attendant comes over to me. This is how I guess, noticeable my displeasure was. She came over and said, sir, I just want to reassure you, we've actually landed here on time, despite our delay. I said, that's great. So we pull in and we're going over towards the terminal, and the pilot comes on and says, guess what? We have no gate. Okay, we have no gate. Now it's about 2 a.m. my time. Like, all right, well, it could be 5 minutes. No, it's 30 minutes. So even the landing, which should be like, okay, we're almost there, ends up being totally frustrating. And so literally, during that 30 minutes, I think I pushed my button 3 times. What's going on? What's going on? I have a coworker, a young coworker who's on the same trip, and she's just 2 rows in front of me, and she's noticing this too, which is part of why I developed this sermon. I want to be better. So anyway, We did finally make it to the gate. I was dead tired. Well, what does James have to tell me about that? Well, I love this one. A bit in the mouth of a horse controls the whole horse. That's what I needed that night. A small rudder on a huge ship in the hands of a skilled captain sets a course in the face of the strongest winds. A word out of your mouth may seem of no account, but it can accomplish nearly anything or destroy it. So I'm sure the flight attendant's used to dealing with people like me, you know, probably shrugs it off. But my young coworker actually, a couple months later, said something to me about it. He said, I've never seen you get so mad. And why was I mad? Because I had to spend another 30 minutes on that flight. Why didn't I take advantage of that and spend that time taking a little nap, spending the time in prayer, reading something? I had a book with me. No, instead I was just so mad, I was just going to let them know how mad I was. Is that the person I want to be? Absolutely not. All right, so we're there, arriving. When I arrive, especially when I'm coming back home, I also have a process that I follow. And that means trying to get off the plane just as quickly as I can. There is a certain kind of etiquette that happens, so you have to wait your turn. I get off the plane, I go down the escalator, and I have a certain spot on the first train car that I like to stand, and I like to stand there because as soon as it gets to the terminal, I can jump right off of it and be the first one on the escalator. And I tell you, seriously, I routinely do that. Why do I do that? We're talking about a few minutes out of my whole lifetime. But it's that sort of manicness, that acting like a madman, wanting to be first, because I've dealt with all of these different stresses and anxiety on this trip. So I look at James and say, what do you have to tell me about this, James? Well, some of you may know I'm a teacher at here at Christ the Shepherd for Sunday school. I'm up here preaching this morning. So James is a little hard on folks like me. He says, don't be in any rush to become a teacher, my friends. Teaching is highly responsible work. Teachers are held in the strictest standards, and none of us is perfectly qualified. Yours truly, especially. We get it wrong nearly every time we open our mouths. If you could find someone whose speech was perfectly true, you'd have a perfect person in perfect control of life. Well, that's certainly not me. But I can try. I can try harder. And when I think about, is this something I'm doing by myself or all of us struggling? I thought about a song that I know from one of my favorite Christian artists. His name is Rich Mullins. And he wrote this song called Hard. And I love these lyrics. He said, Lord, it's hard to turn the other cheek. Hard to bless when others curse you. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be a man of peace. Lord, it's hard. Oh, it's hard. You know, it's hard to be like Jesus. Don't you know it's hard? Oh, it's hard. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be like Jesus. Isn't that true? Especially if you put me on a business flight. So, we're not the only ones. But there's hope. Jesus said, as we heard in our gospel lesson, that we are the salt and the light. Boy, if that San Francisco flight was any indication, there would have been no saltiness and a very dim light. But I want to do better, and I can do better. Jesus said that whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. So not only do I need to think about James in some very practical ways, but think about the words of Jesus. And this is the golden rule. It's that simple. Do to others what you'd want them to do to you. But Jesus knew, and he knows, that we're not perfect. We can try, but we'll fail. Can we do better? Yes. With the help of the Holy Spirit. With the help of reading James. But remember this. He did it all for us because he knows we can't do it for ourselves. He knows I can't do it. He knows I can't be a perfect person. He knows I'm going to fail, especially when you put me in those trying situations. But this is the gospel. Jesus sacrificed everything on the cross so that we can live with the knowledge that our eternal life is secure. So let's all do better. So I will encourage you this week, open up the book of James. Take your favorite translation. Read a chapter a day. There's five chapters. It's easy reading. It's not like reading Paul, which is a little more challenging. Do that this week. And then think about the thing that is a struggle in your life. Where is the place that you turn into this person you don't want to be, and look at it through the lens of James and see if you can do better. I know that I can. Amen.